Week one in the rearview mirror. Thanks, folks, for tuning in to the CBSSports.com College Football Podcast. I am Chip Patterson. And as we sit down, it's time to survey the field, and that means it'll be time for a Fish and Chips podcast. So joining me on the line, CBSSports.com college football and recruiting writer Brian Fisher. Brian, it was a big weekend. You did a lot of football. You even got some high school football in too, right?
Yeah, I actually went out and checked the Allen High School $60 million stadium on Friday. Prior to going to Jerry World on Saturday for Alabama, Michigan, and then drove down to Waco on Sunday for Baylor SMU. So it was kind of a packed football weekend, a nice way to ease into the college football season for sure.
You and Allen is your alma mater. That is the program that sent you out into the football world. How are the Eagles looking this year?
I was pretty surprised. They came out and, last year they graduated a couple guys, Alec Morris, who went to Alabama, he's a quarterback, Jonathan Williams, running back, went to Arkansas. So they lost quite a few guys on offense, but, still made it work. And, they upset the defending state champion, South Lake Carroll, and, with a Texas A&M commitment, Kenny Hill, but, it was good. Get that win over South Lake, which Allen had not been able to do in the past, and open that stadium in style, I guess.
So that was the first game in the $60 million, and that's it. I mean, Brian's shared pictures of this I know on Twitter, but I mean, it looks massive. It's bigger than easily a lot of FBS stadiums.
Oh, it's completely nicer than I would say like 80% of the FBS stadiums that are out there right now. I mean, I've been around the country, seen a lot, but it's even more impressive in person. And there are tons of photos. I think a complete photo gallery on Max Preps, if you want to go over there to our sister site for CBSSports.com on the high school side to go check it out. I think they have plenty of pictures of the exterior, the interior, and the game itself. And It was pretty impressive. And then, Saturday, going to another football palace at Jerry World, Cowboy Stadium down in Arlington. That was also equally impressive with, packing close to a little over 90,000 fans there. So it was a very nice weekend for college football stadiums here in the Metroplex.
So everybody was expecting Michigan and Alabama. We talk about how great college football is for being able to have two top 10 teams going up right against each other. The regular season, we were expecting just this, huge game. People thought Alabama were going to win, but I don't think anyone expected Alabama to jump out and just beat down on Michigan the way they did. What was the feeling inside Jerry World, sort of as Alabama sucked all of the air out from underneath Michigan with that 21-0 lead? Oh, 31-0, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the people that thought, hey, I think Michigan early on can keep it close. Alabama's going to, play pretty conservative. That was the thing that I think, a lot of people were thinking. The offense would be pretty conservative, break some guys in. Obviously, they had a good ground game, good, offensive line. And they kind of pound away, eat some clock up. But, no, they came out firing. And that defense certainly shut down Denard Robinson of Michigan, 21 first quarter points. I mean, it was well over before it began. And I was curious to see how Michigan would attack that Alabama defense. And, they thought they could do it through the air with Denard Robinson, and it just never happened. He didn't look to go take off and run. I said coming in, I think that was the biggest difference for Michigan versus some other openers that Alabama's had is, you could have the perfect defense called and Denard Robinson can escape out of the pocket. He can cut through the middle. He can take a draw play and just throw that out the window. And he never looked to run and do that this game. And so I think that was a curious decision by Al Borges, the offensive coordinator, and Brady Hoke, the head coach. But, bottom line, Alabama looks like they reloaded and replaced a lot of guys. And I know that's what I liked, on Saturday is, I mean, this team looks much different from where it was in 2010 coming off their national title game. Everybody's really bought in. Everybody's, looking to Nick Saban for his leadership, and he's got the blueprint down. He's got his guys bought in, focused for the task at hand. And You know, there's no doubt in my mind I'd move them to number one this year or this week.
We'll see. And a lot of people knew that there were some familiar faces coming back. The offensive line would be one of the strengths of Alabama's offense. You know, you knew you had Barrett Jones, you had DJ Fluker. But I will tell you what, I think that one person that caught a lot of people off guard was true freshman running back TJ Yeldon, 6'2", 215, Mr. Football in the state of Alabama, and he becomes the first Crimson Tide running back to run for over 100 yards in his debut. Is this just him taking advantage of a good opportunity, especially with Michigan's defensive line a little bit undersized, or do you think that we'll see Yeldon starting at some point this season?
I don't know if we'll see him starting, just kind of how the season plays out. You never know. But, I mean, certainly he has the talent to, and that's impressive for a freshman at a place like Alabama. And you mentioned that stat about being the first ever, you know, true freshman to start his first game and rush for 100 yards. And there have been quite a few impressive running backs to come through Tuscaloosa. So that gives you a sense of how good he is. And he is that good coming out of high school. Five-star guy, very impressive, was committed to Auburn for a long time before kind of switching to Alabama very late. And, I mean, he looked like he had it all. He was shifty. He ran a little bit upright. I think that was the only concern. He is a big kid at 6'2", but he had very good balance. He had a great hesitation waiting for the offensive line in front of him to open up the hole. And then when that hole was open, he hit it very hard and cut through. Very tough runner, and he's got the speed to bust it outside. Side and you know, you saw that on the big, I think it was about 40-yard run, and that kind of early on. And I mean, he was just very impressive, to say the least. And Eddie Lacy, I mean, he was battling the ankle injury, and you never, you know, you kind of wonder if maybe that was the reason Yeldon had such a big game. But they've got some really good running backs there. Obviously the offensive line, one of the best in the nation. I mean, that physical, they're very good at the point of attack. I thought it took them a couple of snaps, I think, to kind of maybe a series actually to kind of get used to everything. But once they did and they started to gel, you know, there was no looking back, and they started to assert their dominance against that Michigan defensive line that looked pretty well, you know, pretty good early on. And then by the end of the, you know, third, fourth quarter, I mean, they were just worn out from battling those big guys. And I mean, you got Jalston Fowler also, who had a pretty good game at running back. I mean, you know, this Alabama team, you know, they have so many weapons. And I think, you know, if the wide receiving core can come along, they got a quarterback that can get them the ball in A.J. McCarron, and that ground game with those three guys back there, how they use them. I mean, Faust, they move them all over. I mean, it's really impressive how they're really changing the offense up, and you know, they're looking to be more explosive this year. You know, you're not going to see the 6-3 games, I think, of last year, and that national title game, you know, where Alabama struggled on offense. I think they are going to be much more explosive. You know, they're going to kind of lull you into a sleep a little bit with that running game, and then hit you for a big play over the top, because they got some speedy guys at wide receivers, some good tight ends, and, you know, just a very impressive overall effort for not only TJ Yeldon, but the entire offense.
Speaking of explosive, you got to take a little trip on down to Waco for Baylor's opener against Southern Methodist. It was, you know, the first moving on after Robert Griffin III, the Heisman Trophy winner, you know, and it is Nick Florence who's going to be stepping in his place. He throws for 341 yards, four touchdowns. The Bears win 59-24. A shootout, especially going up against a June Jones-led Mustang squad, was certainly expected. Not a lot of defense in a lot of Conference USA teams, but could you take what you saw from Florence and say that he's going to be able to be all right, you know, especially with Al Borges there looking over him?
Yeah, I think the entire Baylor offense is going to be just fine with Nick Florence running the show. I mean, he's a veteran guy, senior. He's played games before. I mean, that's the biggest thing. This isn't a guy you're just throwing into the fire after RG3. You know, I mean, he started for him a couple games, you know, when RG3 was hurt. Started seven games as a true freshman when RG3, you know, tore his leg up and had season-ending surgery. So, I mean, he's been there. He's gotten the reps. You know, I think he's much more of a team player, and then he, you know, he's going to sit back there. He's going to try to get the ball out to his weapon, you know, his weapons at wide receiver. You know, the running game, I think, is very solid with Jared Salubi and Glasgow Martin, who both rushed for a touchdown. You know, I think Terrence Williams is the next guy. I mean, it is tough to replace the three guy, the, you know, the three main guys that Baylor had last year. I mean, they had, really had a three-headed monster led by Robert Griffin III. But you know, there are a lot more pieces than I think a lot of people think on this Baylor offense. And you know, to me, the story of the opener was probably the defense, and that they looked a little bit better. I think it's still going to be tough to say how they're going to handle Oklahoma State and West Virginia and TCU and Oklahoma and you know, getting into the thick of the Big 12 schedule. But for the first game after what we saw in the bowl game against Washington, this is seems like a much more improved unit. I don't think they quite got the push from their front, you know, defensive line that they would have liked, but at linebacker, at safety, Ahmad Dixon was everywhere in the field. You know, this unit created turnovers, you know, and they had the big stop. I think early on, you know, SMU was driving into the red zone. They got a tip then and took an interception back, and you know, for you know, that eventually set up a big score before half. And
that's very Oklahoma State of them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I said it during the day, you know, during the game, and you know, it was like they were channeling their inner Oklahoma State, because they did give up some yards, and Art Briles acknowledged, you know, that they bended, but they didn't break. And I think that's encouraging if you're a Baylor fan. You know, this isn't going to be an easy out. They're not reverting to Baylor of old this year. They got a lot of playmakers, good offensive line. You know, are they going to be as good as last year? No, they're not. But you know, they can still be pretty good, and certainly a bowl game is very possible, pending some injuries. You know, I think they're a deeper team than a lot of people expect, and they got some guys coming back. I mean, Lake Seastrunk had a big run right in the fourth quarter. He didn't get many carries, but you know, he showed some flashes when he got out there. So I mean, there's plenty of weapons on offense, and I think the defense can create enough turnovers to where they're going to be in a lot of games.
Of course, Lake Seastrunk, you just mentioned, former number one running back recruit in the nation, was at Oregon, has transferred to Baylor. Apparently, because God told him to, because he said a storm's a coming to Oregon, but. I'll tell you one thing. Ducks looked awfully explosive. Everybody has quickly figured out how to pronounce Mariota, not Mariota. And as you see the T-shirt that his family was wearing with the big Oregon O on it?
I missed that.
Yeah, it looks like they're making sure that everybody gets the right pronunciation. But Mariota goes 18 for 22, 200 yards, 3 touchdowns. DeAnthony Thomas continues his insane streak. He's got 148 career touches, and in those 148 career touches, 21 touchdowns. That means once out of every 7 times that the ball has been put in his hands, he's taken it to the house, and he just showed once again why he's one of the most dangerous players in college football. After you're watching Southern Cal, which obviously took care of business against Hawaii, and watching Oregon, do you think that Southern Cal is still the, you know, the front runner? Because after watching both teams, and they were both going up against inferior competition, but I sort of thought this is going to be either or, and I've kind of got it on one of those. Whoever wins the Pac-12 could and should be in the national championship discussion, but I'm giving no edge to either the Trojans or the Ducks yet.
I think they're right. Pretty even, you know, they're kind of right there together. I mean, you look at the question surrounding Oregon coming into the year, being the quarterback position, who would it be, Mariota or Bennett? And I think the question was answered. And, you know, you understand, I think, after that first performance, why people around the Oregon program were so high on Mariota and why they think they'll be just fine and actually think they might have improved quarterback play from what Darren Thomas did a year ago. I mean, they have so many weapons on offense. It's easy to think about them, you know, just kind of plugging and playing guys. And I think they got another guy in there that can put up some pretty big numbers. So they're fine on offense. We all kind of expected that. Now, it was, you know, Arkansas State. You know, we'll see when some good defensive ends and good front seven start coming in and putting pressure on and what happens then. But, you know, I think for right now, Oregon certainly looks like a top five team, and USC's right there too. I mean, I think, you know, they showed a lot of weapons and what they can do in all three phases of the game. The thing I really wanted to see against Hawaii, and yeah, it's Hawaii, but you know, I think the defensive line had a pretty good performance. Leonard Williams was a freshman. You know, he impressed the coaches a lot with his play on Saturday, and you know, I mean, it's going to come down to you know inches. I mean, that's kind of how these two teams are being separated right now. And, I'm just glad, I guess, that we get to see them twice this year. I mean, I think either team has a chance to win both. I think they could split it 1-1. I think one team, you know, could easily be propelled to the national title, even if they lose one that first game, because these two teams are so good, and they might be the only two teams in the country outside of LSU that have enough athletes to really challenge an Arkansas, another SEC team in the national title game. These guys got a lot of speed. They have weapons on offense that are difficult to contain. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play down the, you know, further in the season. I think it'll be a great matchup in November. And for right now, I think we can't, you know, we really can't wait, especially with how Stanford didn't look as sharp. Washington didn't look as sharp. Some of the other Pac-12 teams didn't come out very well in their opener. And, you know, easily, you know, Oregon and USC is the class out west.
What do you sort of take from Washington State not being able to get anything started? Is it really going to be that rough of a go for Mike Leach? Because I thought for sure Jeff Toole looked pretty good last year. Of course, we had Marcus Wilson on the outside. In my mind, it was going to be a very simple, you know, very simple ingredients. You take Mike Leach, you put him in with the talent at quarterback, wide receiver, and we're going to have some productivity. They didn't even reach the end zone once in their opening loss against BYU. How much longer is it going to take before that offense gets clicking?
I think they'll get clicking. I mean, it's obviously difficult coming out in the first game and seeing how pieces work together and how play calls work and, you know, what's the demeanor on the sideline and, you know, how do you communicate with the booth? I mean, there was a lot of issues, I think, for Washington State. And obviously, you know, I mean, Mike Leach has proven that he's been able to turn teams around even after a rough start. And, you know, they got great weapons. Marquez Wilson, you know, terrific wide receiver. You know, Jeff Toole is a great quarterback. I think the offensive line has issues, and that's going to be the biggest question mark going forward for him. But, you know, I think I like what I saw out of the defense. They were a little bit better than I thought. And give BYU credit. I mean, that's a good football team. They could be a double-digit win type team this year. They got a couple remaining games that are difficult, but certainly have what it takes to be in the conversation to get to a very good bowl game. And you know, I mean, it was tough to see. You know, I mean, not Mike Leach not scoring touchdowns. I mean, nobody expected that. But you know, I think given time, they'll be fine, and they just need to warm up. I think that was kind of what the first game was, and you know, once everybody gets on the same page, now that they've got some game reps in the offense, I think they'll be a little bit improved. And you know, to me, the biggest takeaway was not that the offense struggled, but that the defense, you know, looked pretty good at times. Yeah, they had issues, you know, giving up points and giving up big chunks of yards, you know, third down. But for the most part, I actually think they, you know, if you knew what to look for, they actually looked a little bit better than I thought coming into the season.
What, surveying the field, a weekly feature you do once a week, what are some of the things that you've got that sort of jumped off the page for you in surveying the field that listeners can go and check out?
You know, I think you look at the game that I was at in Michigan, and it's not over by any stretch of the imagination for Michigan. I know the fans are disappointed in what happened down at Cowboys Stadium, but the season is not over, and it comes, you know, starts with a big test this week against Air Force. I think that's a difficult transition to prepare for in the triple option, and it's going to be, you know, throwing a different look at them that they have to prepare for. But you know, that's a football team that's going to be fine. I think they're still, you know, in line to win the division and get to the Big Ten title game. I think they certainly have their eyes set on a Big Ten title, and that's what they've been looking for this year as Denard Robinson, you know, goes into his senior year. I think that was the one thing that they've identified, you know, not being able to get the past couple of years, not only under Rich Rod, but before that, for the last couple of years, they just haven't been in the conversation for the Big Ten title. And, you know, that's still a realistic option right now. Getting to the Rose Bowl is not a bad consolation prize for Michigan. Yeah, they're probably out of the national title race, but I don't think they were ever really in it to begin with. I think they were a little bit overrated at number 8. You know, obviously they had a ton of questions. I'm interested to see how Toussaint looks at running back. I think he was a missing piece in that game against Alabama. I'm not saying he would have changed the score, but I think he certainly would have added a dimension on offense that teams have to account for. And so it's going to be interesting. I think for Michigan, they're going to be fine going forward. You know, they're going to get right back in it. They've got really good coaches. Greg Madison's one of the best defensive coordinators in the country. There are a lot of points given up at Cowboy Stadium for the opener, but Michigan can regroup and go forward and be just fine this year. And I look for them to do that. I really think that they have a dynamic threat, a Heisman Trophy type caliber player in the backfield in Denard Robinson, and hopefully they'll open the offense up a little bit and let him run some more, let him do his thing instead of trying to keep him back there. I think there was kind of I almost think that they kind of said, hey, RG3, his senior year, he definitely stayed in the pocket a lot more and was able to make some big plays. And I think that kind of handcuffs Denard. He's not as good of a passer as RG3 was last year, and especially on the deep balls. I mean, you saw him sail some throws. He never really got his feet set on a couple others. I mean, he had a very quick release because he almost had the middle clock in the back of his mind ticking pretty quickly against that Alabama front seven. And it'll be interesting to see how they evolve, but I think they certainly can. And I'm curious to see how the Big 12 shaped up. I think looking at the landscape, Baylor looked a little bit better than a lot of people think. I think West Virginia, obviously, with what they did on offense against Marshall, I mean, that was just impressive, to say the least. Some issues on defense I think still need to be corrected as they get into conference play. But, Geno Smith, Trayvon Austin, Bailey, all those guys, I mean, they look fantastic for the opener. Like they, picked up right where they left off against Clemson in the bowl game. And, there are issues at Oklahoma and Texas. I think those are two of the teams that everybody, counts on year in and year out to be in the conversation for the Big 12 title. And we really don't know how they're going to look. OU struggled in all three phases. Yeah. I think that was the one thing that I saw was, Landry Jones struggled. The running game was inconsistent. The defense had issues. Gave up, 177 yards rushing to one player for UTEP. So a lot of issues surrounding the Big 12, and going to be curious to see how that league shakes out.
Yeah, Geno Smith completes 32 of 36 passes, 323 yards, 4 touchdowns, and West Virginia has scored over 69 points in their last 2 football games. I mean, one was against Clemson, one was against Marshall, and they were very different situations, but that is pretty much, like you said, all the same weapons. You go Alston and Bowie in the backfield, you've got Bailey, you've got Austin, you've got McCartney out on the outside, you've got Geno Smith, and I like West Virginia's secondary. I think that they are slowly, getting away from, Jeff Castile's system, and they're starting to get something that Holgorsen's more comfortable with. And it's interesting because we were talking about how Oregon's got all the different playmakers and he finds people in space in the same way that Mariota was able to just sit under center and make the good decisions. I think that Geno Smith is – those are the things that have made him so much better as he's taken a step forward, really, since the end of last year's regular season. It was those extra bowl practices that Holgorsen will tell you, really when Geno started mastering the system. Now he's got it even more. And that's all about just good decision making. There's just so many talented weapons and there's so much space that it's almost like there's always one throw. And if you make the right one every time, you can be almost unstoppable.
Yeah, I mean, it really is an impressive year for quarterbacks, and the opening weekend really, showed that. I mean, you got guys all over the country that are going to put up some big numbers, and I think everybody kind of understands that, hey, Matt Barkley's the favorite for the Heisman Trophy right now, but, I mean, you look at Geno Smith, you look at a Tyler Bray, I mean, there are some guys that are going to put up some impressive performances, and started off with a bang this week. I also look at how big the ACC did this year. I mean, winning, Clemson winning against Auburn is huge for the league. John Swofford said early on, we got to get those non-conference wins. That's key for the league. I mean, there were a couple upsets this week and some FCS teams beating FBS teams. Well, the worst league when it comes to losing to FCS teams was the ACC, and they've got to get better in the non-conference, and they've got to win the games they're supposed to win. And you know what? With the Clemson winning the way they did without Sammy Watkins, that was impressive. And I think they had a great game plan coming in. Andre Ellington rushing for over 200 yards. I mean, he is a stud. Came up when they needed him to. Tosh Boyd was great. The offensive line looked a little bit better than I think a lot of people expected, and the defense stepped up under Brett Venables to create enough pressure and win that game. And it's going to be a fun next couple weeks, I think, in the non-conference schedule before we get into conference play, looking at how all these leagues kind of shake up and jockey themselves for BCS bowl bids later on.
I'm looking ahead, and it's funny you talk about ACC non-conference matchups. There is a very big one, both for Virginia, but also for Penn State. You know, after losing 24-14 at home, they actually have to travel to Charlottesville to take on a Virginia team that handily took care of Richmond, Mike London's old team. That was kind of expected. But you've got a little bit of playing time for Phillip Sims. Rocco throws for over 300 yards. And, you know, now we're going to see this Penn State team, which obviously showed a little bit of flaws. Ohio team, which is probably being underrated. Very, very good MAC team. But if Virginia can knock Penn State down, the Nittany Lions start 0-2. It's on national television. I think it could be another big leap forward as far as those ACC big non-conference games.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how Penn State does in that game as well. I mean, I think it's a big test for Virginia. I mean, they had a really good season last year. I think Mike London has done a terrific job turning things around there, doing some good things on the recruiting trail. And you know, I mean, I look at that matchup and you know, I see the spread keep going Virginia's way, and I'm thinking not so fast. I mean, yes, Ohio was a good team, and I picked them to upset Penn State. I think there was too much emotion coming from that sideline, too many mental mistakes. I mean, there is some flaws on this Penn State team. I know everybody was thinking, hey, Bill O'Brien, you know, he's at the Patriots. You know, it's still his first head coaching job at the college level. That's an issue. You can't overcome that. You know, little things, especially on game day, how you enter the tunnel, staying at the hotel. I mean, just little things you wouldn't expect play into everything. And I think, you know, they looked sharp early. They kind of disintegrated a little bit after halftime. And Ohio's a very well-coached football team. Hats off to Frank Stolich. I mean, he's got a team that, you know, you look at the schedule and they might be able to go 12-0.
Yeah, Holly predicted that and everybody thought it was crazy. But now that they've got Penn State out of the way, it really looks like they could.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll give all the credit in the world to Holly Anderson at SI. I mean, she certainly was right on the bandwagon, 12-0 for the Bobcats. And you know, they do have to go to Marshall and play them. And I think that might be their toughest remaining test. You never know with MAC play. I mean, you know, MACtion has certainly bitten more than a few, you know, share of their few teams in the past. So it's going to be interesting. But I'm curious to see how Penn State responds. I mean, they're not only down 10 players from guys leaving and all that, but the offense just isn't there. I mean, they've got to get consistency, and they haven't had consistency on offense in a decade almost. I mean, you know, it really, you can date back to maybe that Rose Bowl team of a couple of years ago, when you had enough playmakers that could get to the edge, very good team defensively as well. There were a lot of players on that team, but they really haven't had that outside of that one little, you know, 10-win season kind of run, you know, over a couple of years. And it's taking you know, a little different task now for Bill O'Brien. And you know, going to Virginia, first road game, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. Virginia, I mean, that's going to be big for them. I think if they want to continue to have a big season and make a push in the ACC, tell them, hey, we're here, you know, you got to worry about us now. That's a game they have to win, and it's going to be interesting. I think the quarterback situation still isn't where Mike London wants it to be. But it's manageable and it's going to be a good matchup, I think.
The SEC newcomers, Texas A&M and Missouri, each hosts foes from the SEC East this coming weekend. It'll be Texas A&M playing host to Florida. Their season opener, of course, getting postponed because it was in Shreveport due to Hurricane Isaac. And then Missouri gets to host Georgia in the Zoo. Do you see either of the newcomers pulling off an upset?
You know, I wouldn't be shocked seeing, you know, Florida play as bad as they did on both sides of the ball against Bowling Green for A&M to win that. I mean, they're going to have so much emotion coming into that game at Kyle Field. That's a tough place to play. Yeah, they're breaking a new quarterback, but people forget they have one of the best offensive lines in college football. They got a great running back. They have a solid defense. I'm not saying it's great, but it's solid, even though they're making a transition in schemes from a 3-4 to a 4-3. They're a very good football team when you look at them right now. I think they have a good head coach in Kevin Sumlin who knows how to coach guys up. You know, it's definitely going to be a transition to the week-in, week-out grind of the SEC, which is a much different league from the Big 12. I mean, you're much more defensive back seven heavy in the Big 12 than you are in the SEC, where you're much more front seven heavy. And I think that's going to be a transition on defense that A&M is going to have to undergo, and it might cost them, down the road. But for right now, for the first game, a lot of hype coming into it. Obviously, they're going to prepare. If any team's going to take advantage of Florida's quarterback troubles, it could be A&M. And this is going to be a close game, I think, at the end of the day. But it's going to be a fun one. I think A&M certainly is putting a lot of marbles in for this one. And I wouldn't be shocked if they come out with a win. And the same goes for Missouri. I mean, Georgia's down five stars on defense. They didn't look particularly sharp against Buffalo. And, for both Georgia and Florida, you say, yeah, they didn't really show a lot. They were very conservative on both sides of the ball. They didn't want to, put stuff on tape that A&M or Missouri could pick up on. But, they still struggled. I mean, there's still one-on-one matchups that guys lost. And there's still scheme-wise things that didn't work out very well for them. And, we'll see. Can they adjust? Can they, kind of come together now that they've got those game reps under their belt? That might be the one thing to keep an eye out. And I expect two very competitive games. And it should be fun seeing these two teams go into a new league, and especially a league like the SEC.
Where are you going to be this coming weekend?
I will be home for once, which is always good.
Nice.
You play at Nebraska, which is a much more interesting game, I think, after the first week. And I think you kind of came into it the second week. Not a ton of good games the second week, but you look at the schedule and say, all right, UCLA, Nebraska. But, after what, how good UCLA looked on Thursday on CBS Sports Network and then Nebraska, who knew? I mean, Rex Burkhead goes down, still questionable to play. He might not make the trip. I mean, there's a lot of legitimate concern coming out of Lincoln in terms of how well their running game is going to be coming to the Rose Bowl. But, Taylor Martinez, co-Big Ten player of the year, player of the week, excuse me, after his terrific passing performance.
Yeah, what?
Shocked everybody with how well he threw the ball. And that was, Ellis Johnson, Southern Miss, that's a solid defense. I mean, don't take anything away from Martinez. He really did try to work on his passing game during the offseason. He went to the Manning Passing Academy. There was a lot of, work he did, to get better as a passer. So, we're not talking about him constantly arm punting it, but I think it's a very intriguing matchup. And for both schools, I mean, this is a bigger game than I think a lot of people think, because for UCLA, they could have a pretty good season this year now that they've found the quarterback. They do have issues at offensive line. They got a great running back. I think there's still some questions on defense they need to figure out, but big test for them, big test for Nebraska. I mean, this is going to be one of their, better teams that they face early on in the season. And I think that they could have a pretty good year if they can win this one and get some momentum coming out of that trip out west.
Absolutely. He is Brian Fisher. Follow him on Twitter at Brian D. Fisher. And you can follow all of our work at the Eye on College Football blog at CBSSports.com. Remember, all the CBSSports.com college football podcasts can be downloaded for free in the iTunes store. And be sure to check out later this week. We'll have Dennis Dodd. We'll have our weekend picks panel coming out on Thursday. And anything else that could happen in the wide world of college football. Brian, thanks so much for joining me for another Fish and Chips podcast.
Anytime, good sir. And looking forward to doing it throughout the season. Football is finally here. And I know I got spoiled having two games in 2 days, but I can't wait for week two and wherever the college football world may spin.
Absolutely. Amen. All right. Well, thanks so much for tuning in.